Are we rational human beings and we see the world logically as it really is, or are we all deluded? Welcome to That's What She Read. I'm Valentina, and like every 2 weeks, today we're going to talk about a new book. You're Not So Smart by David McRaney. The reason why we have too many friends on Facebook, why our memories are mostly fiction, and 46 other ways we are deluding ourselves regularly. The book is exactly what the title says, a list of 48 ways in which we delude ourselves. 48 misconceptions that we believe in, clearly and scientifically debunked. I have to admit that I consider myself fairly intelligent, confession time, and I believe I do enough to, let's say, average amount of introspection. So when I read that actually I suffer from hindsight bias, where I believe that I knew things all along even though I really didn't, or that my mind blurs out and lets go of the hardest memory to keep itself sane, that I'm impacted but what I see around me, and I'm not that rational, well, that wasn't so easy to accept at first. Today I won't have time to go through all of the 48 biases. If you are interested in knowing more, I really recommend you pick up the book. It is an extremely interesting read. There are a few that I really want to talk about though, like confirmation bias, embodied cognition, groupthink, the Dunning-Kruger effect, and the self-service bias. Why did I pick these ones? Because they impact us more than we think, and I believe that they have an impact in our daily work environment, when we're making hiring decisions, and when we're leading and in how we're leading our teams. So let's start. I believe I don't have to go too much in detail regarding confirmation bias. Very likely you all have heard about it. Short, we go to look for information that confirms what we think. If we start with an idea in mind and then we do research on it, we will tend to look for things to prove it and discard or consider exceptions what doesn't fit our narrative. It's interesting because I was aware that confirmation bias impacts us when we do research and when we read articles, when we stumble in fake news, and it's basically at the source of most conspiracy theories. I also didn't realize that it can impact how we judge and perceive people. One of the experiments cited in the book shows that what we read or find out about a person impacts our perception of their skills. For example, the experiment mentioned how when people read about Jane's extroverted characteristics, they thought she was more suitable for a client-facing role. When they were exposed to introverted characteristics and messages, they thought she was more suited to be a librarian. This made me reflect about how we get confirmation bias from what we research and find out about, for example, candidates that we are interviewing. When we look at their social media, their LinkedIn, Facebook, or Instagram, and let's admit it, we all do it, I'm wondering what impression we get of these people, not only from their pictures, but also what they write and the adjectives they use. I found myself wondering how what I write and I personally put out there on social media is potentially priming or creating bias in other people in the way they see me. Beyond all those pictures that I carefully deleted from Facebook from my younger years. I knew, of course, about the power of social media to convince us of information that might not actually be true. I just didn't think that it would be so pervasive and unconscious. To add to this, when we actually end up having a person in front of us, or maybe let's assume the same person that we just read about, embodied cognition kicks in. What's embodied cognition? It means that we tend to associate mentally people to characteristics that fit the stereotype that we see and what the image that it's portrayed in front of us matches what we have in our mind. What do I mean by that? Practical, common example. People wearing bright colors are seen as energetic and extroverted. Wearing red will be perceived as being confrontational. Wearing a business type of outfit is seen as being professional and charismatic. So basically, it all compiles into a subconscious list of elements that impact how we judge people that we have in front of us. Scary if you previously thought you were quite a good judge of character and fairly rational. Now, I'm not saying that we should change the way we dress because of how this might be perceived. I still think it's good to be aware of it, both when we think about ourselves and the impression we make, and mostly maybe regarding how we've been judging our colleagues and the people around us, positively or negative, for the way they dress, the accessories they carry, or the words they use. Another interesting point I was surprised about is what we call the Dunning-Kruger effect, and parallel to this, the self-serving bias. Basically, these are two different ways in which our brain makes us think that we're smarter than we actually are. The less we know, the more we overestimate our knowledge. The more we know, the more we're impacted by imposter syndrome. Funny. I would have loved to see here a split of research by gender. A common concept when we think about gender in the workplace is that women are less open to shared success, to flounder knowledge, they're less vocal. We know that women don't apply for jobs unless they fit 90% of the criteria and all of that. So I was left wondering if that's because as a gender we are less impacted by self-serving bias and Dunning-Kruger effect and have truly a more realistic view of ourselves, or if we're also impacted by the same effects in our mind, we just don't externalize it as much as men do. For example, we might think that we can do those jobs, that we are smarter, that we know better. We just hold back on speaking out in meetings, on doing self-marketing, on talking about it. I'll be interesting to hear your opinion on this. So drop me a message to let me know what you think about this. Groupthink is another really interesting topic. It's known that we tend to avoid conflict, or at least we tend to want to avoid conflict. And whenever there is a decision that needs to be taken and people are in the same room, they are impacted by groupthink. everyone, yourself and the people around you, might be thinking something very contrary to what's being said, and they might not be open to voice their concerns for fear of conflict, fear of repercussion, not wanting to stir the pot, or in some cases not wanting to drag the meeting longer than it's needed, or simply because they're not comfortable with speaking out loud. On the other hand, it's been proven that conflict, debate, exchange of ideas in a healthy way improves the quality of the decisions that we take. I know it's hard. I'm quite the outspoken person, or so I've been told, and still there have been occasions where I didn't agree with what was being said. And I had this thought in my mind that I was the only person disagreeing, and it wasn't worth bringing it up, so I didn't. Who knows if that's really true? Now, when I think about it, in hindsight, I see that I should have. It could have led other people to open up, even if they didn't have the same concern that I have. Still, being the first person could have opened the way for them to share and then lead us to have a healthy debate and come to a better outcome. So how do we get around it? One way that McCraney suggests is to have a designated pot stirrer, devil's advocate. I mean, designate a person to be devil's advocate. So give someone in the group, in the meeting, in your team, the task of voicing the most contrary, unpopular opinion that they can think of. And then let the discussion flow and see what happens to the group dynamic once the first objection has been raised. Now, the book doesn't mention this, but from my experience, I would strongly suggest that you rotate this person, otherwise they risk to get quite the reputation. And I would also recommend that to start, you choose someone that feels comfortable with it, maybe has a reputation for being outspoken, and then rotate through the whole team over how many meetings you may have. Don't start with people that are not comfortable, and don't let them off the hook either. Normalize the fact that bringing up challenging opinion is welcome. And let everybody have the gift of experiencing this freedom of voicing a contrasting position, of sparking a healthy debate, and see that nothing negative happens. I had to do a very thorough selection of all the myths that I wanted to talk to you about today. There's so many, and they're all very interesting. The last one that I want to mention is priming. Now, if there are some people that are still not aware of what priming is, it means that we're not so aware of how and when we're being influenced as much as we think we are. In reality, we are completely unaware of the constant impulses which are nudging us and that we receive from our environment and then lead to ideas formed in our unconscious mind that then make us buy something or feel positive or choose a certain song, so on and so forth. Practical example, the smells and the texture of the things that are around us. Why do supermarkets smell of cookies or fresh baked bread? It will trigger something in your mind. The sounds that we have, the visual clues that we're given, literally everything that it's around us, it's there as an opportunity to prime us. Priming works best when we are on autopilot, We're not consciously thinking about a topic, we're not monitoring our thoughts and censoring our reactions. Think about when you're driving on your commute, or you're on the train, or on public transport, or you're at home doing mundane tasks. These are moments that are perfect for priming, and that's why it's often, almost always, used in supermarkets, radio ads, and the likes. It also works very well because those stimuli don't only impact us on the spot. They will be recalled by our brain for quite a while, so something that we may hear on the radio as we are driving might be priming us for a later reaction. Priming also works in interpersonal interaction. Typical examples: workplace negotiation. We know that priming, such as dropping hints, using certain words, or creating a certain settings, help you achieve the impact or the outcome that you want to have. Again, think about the setting in restaurants with the relaxed atmosphere, dim lights, the smell. It doesn't have to be limited to food and shopping, though. Think about the type of places that you're organizing your next conferences in, or the next big decision meeting. Is it a light or a dark room? What is the room set up? How are people sitting? Is it cold? Is it hot? And elements like that. A very positive way of applying priming is what I've seen happening in remote settings, in priming for energy. What do I mean by that? We know that being on Zoom or Microsoft Teams or whatever other virtual tool you're using, it's exhausting, and we end up zoomed out, as we are saying these days. There is a way to combat that. Music is an intense source of priming stimuli. So exposing people in the meeting to energetic music when they're entering, upbeat music during break, will help. Because of the association with the music, people will automatically feel more energized, more open to speak up, and more willing to take an action after they've heard it. The last thing that I want to mention is that, unfortunately, self-priming doesn't work. Just imagine how easy would life be if it did. Do I need to do a workout and I don't want to? I'll just put some rock music in the background and do my kickboxing workout without complaining. Yeah, no, that doesn't work. I wish it did. Priming has to be subconscious to work. This doesn't mean, though, that the atmosphere that we create around us, the music that we listen to, and the stimuli that we surround ourselves with have no impact. There are other psychological effects and interaction that will create a positive feedback loop. So it's still worth having upbeat energetic music to wake up, or create a relaxing environment when we want to chill down, pump ourselves up with power colors, or blast some energetic music before a meeting. Just go ahead and do what you need to feel good. Just know that you're not really priming yourself because you're consciously doing it. We're reaching the end of our time, and I hope you have enjoyed this episode, talking about all the way in which we are not that smart. Most likely, when I will look at the metrics for this episode, I will fall prey of the Texas sharpshooter fallacy, another one of the biases, and tend to ignore any random chance to find a meaning in the patterns of listeners that I can find. So help me be smarter. Let me know if you have enjoyed this type of content. Leave me a message and tell me what you want to hear more of. In the meantime, if you don't want to miss more updates on books, leadership style, productivity techniques, some author interviews, And whatever I may be reading next, follow me on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or any other platform when you get your podcast from. Goodbye, and I'll talk to you in 2 weeks.